This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
With Brian O'Connor, head baseball coach at Virginia, just heard from Patrick Bailey, NC State catcher, who's going on to fame and fortune in the Bay Area. We wish him the best. Andrea Adelson will join us in about a half an hour. Of course, you do have us here on ACC Network. We're streaming live on that ESPN app, not to mention our good buddies at SiriusXM 371. If you would like to call in, you certainly can, because we're going to talk a little football now. Number is 844-SAY-ACCN. And Wes Durham, with that said, teams on the rise. You do feel some momentum with certain programs right now in the ACC this side of Death Valley.
Yeah, I certainly believe we've talked a little bit here since we've been back in the early part of the month about, you know, certainly North Carolina and Louisville with the way the first years for Mac Brown and Scott Satterfield went. And then I think there are a couple of other teams that are going to get some love. Virginia Tech obviously is the BPI favorite to win the or FPI favorite to win the Coastal Division, and we've talked about the value of North Carolina and Virginia Tech and what that game might mean in the Coastal Division. Pac, once again this offseason, is also presenting a lot of conversation about, with the quarterback change, the offensive coordinator change, with Rhett Lashley joining Manny Diaz, what things are going to be transpiring on offense at the University of Miami. And remember, we touched on this with Coach Diaz a couple weeks ago. They lose Shaq Quarterman, who I think, through some of the adversity of that program the last couple of years, turned into one of the great leaders in Miami history. Michael Pinckney also was a guy who played a lot of football for him. Both those guys are gone. But they do bring back Greg Rousseau. Quincy Roche, a guy you've spoken of several times, is also a huge piece of maybe what the future for the University of Miami is on defense. And then you get to Virginia Tech. And we talk about Virginia Tech and certainly the way Justin Fuente took a sluggish start at the beginning of the year and pushed it to a very, very optimistic feel for 2020. But all of these schools we're talking about being on the rise are challenging a team that has been one of college football's best teams for the last 5 years. But when you think about the Hokies, it's interesting. You know, Hendon Hooker did such a great job of stabilizing the quarterback position for them. A dual threat for sure. They bring back a lot of talent on defense. How does that fit for what they want to do? Especially with the coordinator change there after Bud Foster retired. So I think there is reason for optimism in Blacksburg. The second part of this is, beyond these four that we're talking about, who do you like? Who do you think's got a chance to emerge? And we'll take some calls on this at 844-SAY-ACCN as well. Don't forget, we got a video mailbag on Thursday and Friday as well. So all those ideas into play here. I think it's going to be interesting. Carolina's is so based on offense, and we see some of those guys back potentially on defense. It could be factors, but really it's going to be fascinating to see which team kind of moves up through this and challenges the Tigers. If there is a challenger for Clemson, I mean, let's be honest. Clemson has not been challenged very much. Carolina did the best job in the league a year ago for sure in their ball game in Chapel Hill.
I think there's more than just those four, Wes. I'll beat this drum to death. Nobody's talking Pittsburgh. Nobody.
Right.
I mean, Pat Narduzzi is. My man Paris Ford is. The locals in the Pittsburgh area are certainly thinking that, hey, this could be a special team. But, you know, we're talking offense with Louisville and North Carolina. And, I totally buy the expectations there. You got everybody and their brother coming back at Virginia Tech. Totally buy that, too. Miami's got athletes. And now all of a sudden they think with my man Mr. King that they're going to have some offense to tie into that. But to me, the one team that's bringing some serious, I'm going to punch you in the nose every Saturday, is this team right here with the sweetest uniforms in the ACC, and that's Pittsburgh. That defensive line last year was outstanding. They're going to be better this year. If they get any offensive production, at least consistently, I think Pittsburgh's a team that nobody's talking about. Now, I hear a lot of Virginia Tech. I hear a lot of North Carolina. I hear a lot of Miami on the coastal side. I don't hear anybody talking about Pitt, and I really don't understand it. I think you can maybe make the case that Pittsburgh's got the best defensive line, not only in the ACC, but maybe in the country. You heard me. Go crazy on that hot take. And those dudes are nasty up front. They're nasty, and they're all coming back. you know, Pat Narduzzi's always been a defensive minded coach. And when you got my man Paris Ford back there, Roman in the back, they got the best duo, I think, in terms of safeties. Their defensive front's great. If Pittsburgh gets any kind of consistency on offense, I'm telling you, they're going to be a handle in the Coastal Division. And nobody's talking about it. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with that, and I think you're right. And it's amazing that a lot of people, and I thought Paris Ford, when he was with us, mentioned this earlier that, you know, everybody's forgotten about Rashad Weaver being back, right? I mean, he's the guy that they lost in the preseason last year. And you start thinking about Jalen Twyman, Patrick Jones coming back, you know, Alexander. I mean, they've got a formidable front no matter the combination that they put. Now, they did lose Saleem Brightwell and some guys. Chase Pines played a lot of football for him at linebacker. And then Paris Ford and Damari Mathis, I'll just be honest, those are two really good football players in the back end. So you're right, defensively they could be very, very solid. Now, offensively, I think we're talking about a little bit of their flash here because up front, you know, one of the best centers in the ACC is Jimmy Morrissey, Pack. So offensively, are they going to be able to keep the momentum going? I mean, and Kenny Pickett is a veteran guy. In fact, I haven't looked at the numbers yet. He might be one of the most veteran guys in this league in terms now of starts when you go back over the last 3 years, right? I mean, he's a guy that has played a lot of football for them. So let's see kind of where Pittsburgh is. And again, you know, it's about momentum. It's going to be about momentum, and there's a lot to be had early in the year, especially under the awkward nature this season is going to begin, I think.
If you're going to ask me on June 24th, who is the ACC sleeper? I mean, we know who the ACC king is, right? That's a Clemson Tiger answer until proven otherwise. But to me, the sleeper in the league is Pittsburgh. I think North Carolina is going to be really good. I think they're going to be fun to watch. Ditto for Louisville. Florida State's the intrigue one because, you know what, you got a new coach. You know there's talent. That team is galvanized with their offseason, with what we've talked about here the last couple weeks. They've got a quarterback back with James Blackman and other options. If their offensive line is good, they could be really good. Same thing with Miami. I mean, hey, we know they got dudes. We know they got players. Their offensive line can gel, and they get Mr. King doing his thing at quarterback. Miami could be that team. But to me, the one team, as I just pointed out, that I don't hear anybody talking about in terms of North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Louisville, Florida State, Miami. I hear those all the time. I don't hear Pittsburgh. And I'm just going to give everybody fair warning. I just think that that defense travels. I don't care if there's 85,000 people in the stadium. I don't care if there's 8 people in the stadium. A defensive team that knows how to play likes to punch you in the face. And that's what Pitt does, man. They will hit you. And that defensive line attacks. I talked about those safeties. They're as good as anybody in the country in the back. I just think that that's the one team. And here's the other thing I like about Pitt, Wes. Schedule. We harp on schedule all the time. And if we're going to have a conversation based on the college football season, based on, hey, we're going to play 12 games, in years past, I think Pitt's non-conference schedule has been so difficult. And a tip of the cap for them playing people of note that it's also taken away potential easy W's. I look at their schedule, non-conference schedule, and go, you know what? Notre Dame, can't wait to see that game. But it's very manageable this year for Pitt. So I think their schedule breaks to their side. I love their defense, and Pickett's got experience. I just think that's the one team in the league that they're not going to get enough attention as we get into August and obviously hopefully kicking off the season in September.
Yeah, their crossover, by the way, is Florida State on October 31st, Pack. They always play Syracuse, but their other crossover in the Atlantic is Florida State this year. So that's an intriguing game, too. You're talking about two teams that potentially could be moving up, and that's scheduled, by the way, for Halloween. So that could be. In fact, they play at Florida State on Halloween, and then the following Friday night play Virginia Tech at home at Heinz Field. Talk about a big 2 week set. Now, you mentioned the schedule. Miami of Ohio at Marshall, Richmond at home out of the Colonial. And then Duke at home before they go to Miami in early October. And then they get a bye week before Notre Dame. But as Brian Kelly has said on more than one occasion, everybody gets a bye week before they play Notre Dame this year.
Yeah, but Notre Dame can't complain because you're not in the league. You know, and when right. I hear that, it's like deaf ears. Hey, guys, you know what? Everybody else is in a conference. So if you don't want your football to be right. there and you want your independence, I got no problem with that. You are entitled to be independent. However, you're not entitled to complain mm-hmm. about conferences that say, well, you know what? We're going to give teams open dates before we play you. So, you know, it's a two-way street. So Notre Dame's going to be really, really good. Ian Book being back. I'm high on the Irish for the year 2020. But you can't complain about schedules when you're not in a league. It's really that easy.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'd love to hear from folks about this at 844-SAY-ACCN. Teams that, you know, is the optimism merited, right? Is it warranted? I mean, you know, certainly Carolina it is. And I thought Mac Brown on our primetime show a couple of weeks ago talked about the impact of younger people that may have gotten there in January and got a feel for the system. And, you know, what about that? And then where are they going to be defensively? And that's going to be a constant topic until the Tar Heels take the field this year. But you'd like to think with some of that experience coming back that they are going to take a step for the coordinator, Jay Bateman there. But, I'll be interested to hear what folks have to say too, because we've beat those schools in particular around quite a bit here. And you say Pittsburgh is kind of slid under the radar. And, you know, when we get a hold of Dave Clawson at some point, I bet he would fight for his team's recognition in this offseason too, right? Because that's a program that has done some positive things here the last handful of years, as you said yesterday.
Well, you and I disagree about their beginning of their season. I think there's some potential problems for Wake, given the fact three
there
starters
are.
Back. But, you know, Appalachian State is going to be a fist fight. That is a good old-fashioned love fest. Whether that game's in Boone or in Winston-Salem. And, of course, Notre Dame's right here at the Duke's Mayonnaise Classic. You heard me, the Duke's Mayonnaise Classic here in Charlotte. So Dave Clawson's guys will get two serious tests early, but he's done a remarkable job in Winston-Salem. He has absolutely maximized that program. They've been consistently good. They're fun to watch. They're going bowling. They're winning their bowl games. Not to mention he's a foodie, mm-hmm. so he's an easy guy to root for on top of that.
Hey, by the way, we say it and it happens because that's how good our production staff is. Dave Clawson, 9 o'clock tomorrow right here on this show.
Excellent.
Just like that.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Andrea Adelson coming up here in about 15 minutes. We look forward to having her on the program as always. And we'll play a clip from Heather Like from yesterday. She was excellent as usual. But we've got Kevin in North Carolina who's been holding patiently. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Sure missed you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
I agree with you, Pack. I like the Pitt quarterback. Name's not coming up right now, but he's got a lot of moxie. He reminds me of Dungy at Syracuse a year ago. The kid's tough. Really tough. And if you don't mind, I'd like to get your opinion on a basketball question. Is that okay?
Sure, whatever you want.
Alright. So, what is the greatest ACC national championship team ever? 1957 Carolina beat Wilt Chamberlain in Kansas City in three overtimes after they beat Michigan State the day before in three overtimes. 1974 NC mm-hmm. State. Five All-Americans on that floor when they beat Maryland to win the ACC championship. Five All-Americans. Then they beat UCLA and then didn't have a letdown and beat Marquette, 74 NC State. 1972 Duke, who destroyed those Jive kids on the Fab Five. And I think a sleeper here, 2009 Carolina, who beat Michigan State in Detroit by what? 27-17 destroyed Michigan State in Detroit. What's your take on those four? 57 Carolina, 74 NC State, 92 Duke, 2009 Carolina. What do you think?
All right, Kevin, thank you for the phone
Kevin.
Call. All right, Wes, you want to jump in the deep end of the pool on that one first? Go ahead. Or would you like to add one?
I think... Well, I mean, it's hard to beat 57 and 74 because those two teams combined for one loss. Right? I mean, NC State's only loss in 1973-74 was a made-for-TV game in St. Louis against UCLA.
Right. In early December.
Right. Carolina did not lose in 57. So while I have great respect for what Duke did in 92, I have more respect for what Duke did in 91, beating Vegas, by the way, in Indianapolis pack. I got to be honest with you. The 91 Duke team and the 92 Duke team, if you asked me to pick, I'd pick 91 ahead of 92. That's just me, though.
I agree. That's why I said, is there another one you'd like to add?
The 09 Carolina team, when people go back and look at the 09 Carolina team, Hansborough, Ellington, Lawson, you know, you can get twisted on the 09 Carolina team and the 05 Carolina team with Sean May, Rashad McCants, Raymond Felton, Jawad Williams, Marvin Williams, right? I mean, there's all sorts of different dynamics there. To me, I would settle right now with 74 and 57 if you asked me to pick one of the two. Different era of basketball, but I would tell you this. I think the 74 NC State team and the 57 Carolina team are a notch above the other ones.
I was going to go 74.
And then behind them, I would – yeah, I know we did that on opening night, didn't we? We talked about NC State, Maryland being the greatest event in ACC history. I still believe that. The 91 Duke team would be right behind Carolina and NC State, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would go 74 NC State. But, you know, comparing eras is impossible. I don't care what the sport is. Man, the game's different. The landscape's totally different right now in college athletics versus where it was in the 70s. That's a tough call. But I'm with you on the 91 Duke versus 92 Duke. And I understand – why Kevin included that Duke era, that run that Kay had. But, man, I was there the day they knocked off Vegas. That was crazy how great Vegas was. I mean, that was grown man basketball is what that was. Now, you had to man up to beat those dudes, and they did. North Carolina's run in 09 was spectacular. And of all those teams, you know, when you go back and look at what Roy's team did in the tournament, we always talk about once you get to March Madness, you're going to have one game. I don't care who you are. Normally, you're going to have one game where you don't play particularly well. The team you're playing plays great, and you've got to figure out a way to survive. That was not the case for North Carolina in 09 in the tournament. They destroyed everybody. And to take Michigan State basically in their backyard and woodshed them in the championship game, what they did in the tournament was as spectacular a run as you'd want to see. And that normally does not happen. So I think that team gets thrown in the mix because of that accomplishment, and rightfully so. But my gut would be the 74 NC State team because, again, it was just a different era of basketball. It was a different pressure. You know, you had to win the tournament to get to the NCAA tournament. It wasn't one of those things that, hey, you can have a lousy March in the early part and you're still in the dance. It's just different. And it's almost an impossible question to answer, but that's how I'd lean.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. To me, the era is even 17 years separating the 57 Carolina team and the 74 NC State team. That's almost too far to, and then certainly when you go 74 to 91, that's another 17 years. I mean, it's hard to draw the lines of comparison with those two. But
you know what's interesting, though, Wes?
Teams now.
You know what's interesting about that question? It's exactly 17 years. And we're talking about the 57 team. Add 17, you get to 74. You add 17, we talk about the 91-92 Duke. You add 17, you get to the 09 Carolina. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, 2026 or some ACC team that's going to give us some magic. So it is interesting that those were in 17-year compartments, all four of those squads. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I'll leave the math to you, by the way, on this program.
That's probably a good idea.
Real quick, if you missed our show yesterday, and we're going to do this from time to time, if you miss a portion of our program, Heather Like was with us yesterday, the great athletics director, University of Pittsburgh, and we got into an interesting discussion about name, image, and likeness. And yeah, Bubba Cunningham was with us a couple weeks ago, had some tremendous insight. We've talked about the quotes from both Bubba and from Kevin White, the AD at Duke along the way. But I think Heather Like yesterday brought to the surface in pretty concise form and fashion what name, image, and likeness is and what the concerns are.
I think many of us who work in this world are are pretty concerned. You know, we know we have to evolve the profession and things have to change. We're feeling a little, you know, obviously the states and have legislation out there that is proposed. So there's some pressure to make a change and make some impact. All of us are most concerned. I think my biggest concern is really about the recruiting aspect of it, the booster involvement, and the shift in focus away from, you know, the world of what we know as college sports. As far as when you come to Pitt, you're coming for an extraordinary world-class education and an opportunity to compete at the highest level, go compete for ACC and national championships, and obviously develop them as proud leaders and alumni of Pitt. But that core message, you know, if it gets diluted by how many social media followers you can have and how you can capitalize on that and what this autograph session can pay you, it's just a pretty big shift. We know we need to shift at some point, but I think we've got to be really careful about the guardrails we put in place to try to manage and monitor the NIL issue.
You know, Wes, we've got so much on the plate in terms of trying to figure out college football, but that issue, it's ticking. And the NCAA is going to have to move one way or the other on this. And I know we've had Bubba Cunningham on, and you just heard what Heather had to say, and there's other people around the country from athletic directors that understand, hey, the states aren't wasting any time. Florida just passed it into law from name, image, and likeness. You mentioned what their governor said, who said, hey, listen, you know, here in the great state of Florida, we know Alabama and Clemson have great programs, and we got great schools too. So if you want to maximize name, image, and likeness, you might want to hang out and stay in state. This has become a huge issue, and it's had momentum, but the NCAA, I know that everybody's working with Congress, and Marco Rubio's got a bill that's going out, and he's been involved in all that stuff. I don't know where this goes, but I do know there's going to have to be some kind of decision made within the next year. You're going to have to see some serious movement from the school standpoint about what they're going to do to make something happen, because the states are not wasting any time.
But, Mark, don't you get the impression, though, that the Power Fives want a little bit more say-so into kind of what this ultimately becomes than just these guardrails or guidelines that have been set up? And one of Heather's mentors, Gene Smith, was one of the guys that, you know, put pen to paper on this deal. I mean, he and Val Ackerman of the Big East are two of the most notable people on this committee. And so, I mean, it's not like she doesn't know the phone number of the guy to talk to, but the idea is, the Power Five ADs, almost to a person, are expressing some concern about the implications. They're not talking about what they all agree it's got to go. But the way it's being administrated right now, I think, quite frankly, in short, I think it's different for Power Five schools than it is for other schools. And I'm just going to, I mean, I don't think I'm breaking news here, but don't you think that is part of the issue we're looking at here, is the separation of what the Power Five has and what everybody else has?
I'm going to take it a step further. There are 500,000 student athletes that participate in sports. I still ask the question with name, image, and likeness, and that is, how many of the 500,000 student athletes will this affect? I don't know the answer, but I think in general, when people think of this, they think, oh, everybody's going to get a piece. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think it's a very small number of the 500,000 that this actually is going to affect. Now, I may be 100% wrong about that. Mm-hmm. Only time will tell, but time is really the story here, I think, because the participants are going to have to figure out what is the answer. And again, Bubba Cunningham made it really clear to us that they're kind of sick and tired of the NCAA kind of telling them, hey, here's what it's going to be. And the schools are going, whoa, we got to live with this. So let us figure out what makes the most sense. So the schools are going to have to figure this thing out quickly.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Thanks again to Brian O'Connor, baseball coach at Virginia, Patrick Bailey, soon-to-be star of San Francisco Giants from NC State. And now we're joined by Andrea Adelson, fresh off the Barbie compound from downstairs. She's good to go. Andrea, good morning. How are you?
Guys, I am looking forward to today's big Barbie action where we're giving them all baths and doing their hair. So that's going to be the highlight of the day.
Way too much information, Andrea. Way, way too much information on that bad boy. So you're doing okay, though? I mean, this pandemic has everybody at home, obviously, the last 3-4 months. And you mentioned you're trying to touch base with a ton of players and coaches and athletic directors because there's so much really going on. Despite the fact it's the middle of June, it really is a bizarre time, isn't it? I mean, just so many crazy, amazing issues taking place at once.
This is the busiest offseason that I can remember. And we're talking about offseasons that have gotten increasingly busy as the years have gone on. No such thing as an offseason anymore. But in terms of the news that has come out when we're talking about the pandemic, the protests after George Floyd's death, player empowerment now that we're seeing. There's so much to cover and so much to talk about. And these stories seem to change every single day. So it's not as if doing a couple of interviews in a day are going to satisfy all the questions. All of these stories lead to more questions and then more news breaks that leads to other questions. And so every single day, you're trying to make phone calls to get information about what's happening, both on campuses, inside universities with workouts, about not only what the football season is going to look like, the sports season in general, but also about whether players now are going to use their voices more, as we've seen over the last several weeks, whether we're talking about leading unity walks or asking their coaches to be more receptive to listening to them, or even out at UCLA, players asking for more protections when it comes to returning to campus for voluntary workouts. This is an evolving story, and I don't think there's going to be any slowdown until, I don't know, maybe February. Maybe. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Andrea, you have penned one of your stories on ESPN.com is one we mentioned earlier in this program today, and it is about the petition that Kendrick Scott started, the former Florida State linebacker, in the potential renaming of Doak Campbell Stadium in Tallahassee because of the former FSU president's stance on segregation. His grandson, who was a former mayor in Boca Raton, has come out and had some comments. I mean, kind of, is there a timeline to this in your mind, or are we just in a wait and see to Florida State President John Thrasher's next move, if you will?
I think it's wait and see right now, but certainly the process is underway. Athletic Director David Coburn now is conducting a review, and I don't think Florida State can afford to just sit on this and allow this to take a month. I think there's going to have to be some swift, decisive action. There's a story today in the Tallahassee Democrat, one of the editors at the student newspaper, the Florida Flambeau, that had several run-ins with Doak Campbell while he was president in terms of trying to silence some student reporters who were going to be reporting about desegregation efforts. And this student reporter basically said he doesn't think the name should come off. And this is a divisive issue, the way that we've seen it become a divisive issue on campuses and in states and cities all across the country. You've got those who think, well, you know, the football stadium and the football program was largely built on the success of African-American players. How can there be a name on the stadium of a university president who is a segregationist? But the flip side of that from those supporters say, well, there wouldn't be a Florida State football program the way that we know it today or a stadium without the support of Doak Campbell. And so those are the things I'm sure that David Coburn is going to be weighing as he begins to conduct this review. And I'm sure he's not going to be the only one. We have seen schools across the country now start to undertake reviews of the names on campus buildings. We saw it at Clemson, statues that may be on buildings. Texas players have been vocal about this as well. So I don't think this is just going to be isolated to Florida State. I think all universities would do themselves good if they start looking at and reviewing the names that are on all the buildings on their campuses and all the statues as well.
Andrea, and I mentioned that a while ago. You know, this is not exclusive to Florida State. It's taking place all over the country. And, you know, one decision at school X doesn't mean that's what school Y is going to do. And, again, if you're Florida State, you got to look into the facts. And there's always that delicate balance, like I said, when you start talking about history and doing your homework and understanding what people are upset about. And you need to listen and pay attention. We've talked about the uncomfortable conversations here since we started going live again and seeing student athletes taking a position to say, listen, we got a platform. We got a chance to be heard. And I think that if you're in a position of power, regardless of what school we're talking about, and if there are enough people that say, hey, I've got an issue, I got a problem, you got to pay attention. And again, I don't know what Florida State's going to do, but you know what happened at Clemson or what happens at Texas or any other school, Florida State's got to take care of Florida State. I mean, this has got to be, hey, your constituents, you're the fans that are coming into town, all that stuff. It's got to be a Florida State decision. You can't worry about what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that, Pac, because, you know, just because it's happening other places doesn't mean it has to happen at Florida State. I believe it should happen. That's just my own opinion on the matter. But I'm not the one who's going to be making the decision on that. I think what's been interesting, I haven't seen current players come out and have an opinion on what they think should happen with the stadium, the way that maybe we've seen at some other places. And so that's one thing that has stood out to me is I haven't seen an outcry from those who are on campus. There have been former players. You mentioned Kendrick Scott, Freddie Stevenson, who was a fullback several years ago, also has come out in favor of removing the name and renaming it for Bobby Bowden and maybe even having Charlie Ward's name on the field. But again, these are decisions that universities are going to have to start looking into and making because I don't think the status quo fits anymore, at least not right now in this moment. And when you have former players or current players or folks on your campus who are voicing unhappiness, then the least that you can do is listen to them to understand where they're coming from, to hear their point of view, and not to completely dismiss them outright the way maybe that was done in the past.
Andrea, I want to follow up on that because Florida State has obviously been the focal point of the voice of the student athlete. And Marvin Wilson was certainly one of the first of many guys who have now voiced their opinion on whether it's racial equality, social injustice, whatever the case may be. I get the impression, and Pac and I both have college age kids, so I think we're see it on the front line. The voice of the college student, the voice of the younger person is the voice that's driving this movement. And I think it's going to be something very interesting, almost like a storyline in the 2020-2021 athletic season on the college level.
I agree with you 100%. And what I've been thinking about when I listen to all of these players now using their platforms to speak out, whether it is what Marvin Wilson did or what Chuba Hubbard did at Oklahoma State, what the UCLA players did with the coronavirus testing and the protections that they want, Texas players. I mean, we've seen these examples now across the entire country. What I've thought about is what happens once they all get back onto campus completely together, going through team meetings and workouts together, not clustered in little groups, but the entire team together when the coaches are going to be talking to them collectively as a group. I wonder if we'll continue to see the number of players that we've seen speak out, or because these players now have been basically isolated in front of their computers, they're using social media more, they're watching all of these stories develop on social media, they feel empowered now. on social media themselves. It used to be that it was go through the sports information department, request an interview. Maybe you'd hear back. Maybe you wouldn't. You get a player on the phone. Now these players are amplifying their voices on social media. They don't need people like me anymore. They can just go ahead and say what they want on social media. Remember a few years ago, there used to be social media bans on teams where players weren't even allowed to post on social media. That seems to be a sea change now. And so what I'm wondering is, as we get closer to the season, when there's more control exerted by the football coaches, whether these players are going to continue to feel emboldened to go on social media and to use that platform to try and get some of the changes that they feel they want, and or to call out coaches they feel like are not doing the right things. We just saw that again yesterday at West Virginia.
Andrew, we had Mike Bray on the show this week, and he was talking about how he's rooting so hard for college football to start because it's got a trickle-down effect on not only basketball but other sports. I know you're working on a piece regarding football and its importance to the Olympic sports, which almost kind of get forgotten about because right now we're all concentrating on football. What have you learned doing a little research in terms of the trickle-down effect from football to the Olympic sports?
So when we talk about the season starting on time, the season means the football season, right? There's not a lot of discussion about the other fall sports like soccer, cross country, volleyball. Those sports also want to be able to start on time and to be able to have their full seasons. And beyond the fall sports, you've got the winter and spring sports. And most of those sports, either call them Olympic sports and non-revenue sports, are so dependent on the money that comes in from both football and basketball that they need an entire football season to be played in some kind of shape, form, or fashion in order for their budgets to continue to stay at the level they're used to seeing. Now, there are schools all across the country that have had to slash their budgets, and the programs that have suffered the most are those Olympic sports, talking about having to make reductions that coaches feel like they can make without hurting their programs. And they've also had to look at their scheduling and be creative. I talked to Florida State softball coach Lonnie Alameda for the story, and she was telling me that they have to think about whether they're going to play an entire softball season this year, whether they'll be able to play a full set of games, because she's had teams call her and say, we can't travel to Tallahassee this year. And so now there are holes in her schedule. Well, how is she going to fill those? The ACC is even thinking about doing going back to doubleheader Saturdays, single game Sundays for league play in order to mitigate the amount of travel on those teams and save some money in that respect. So you're seeing programs all across the country, all of these Olympic sports have to rethink the way that they're running their operations in order to not just be able to get a season in, but also to save a little bit of money because of the cuts that have had to be made, and also the potential for cuts to be made if something happens in the football season where they're not going to be able to get the same amount of money that they're used to getting.
Yeah, it's, I tell you what, it's a, we use the term, it's a puzzle. Some of the pieces are bigger than others. For the entire puzzle to be completed, though, they're going to have to find where the little corners are and the pieces that you got to turn back around to fit. And that's where the Olympic sports come into play and some of the sacrifices they have to make. Great stuff from Andrew Adelson. Be well, stay safe, enjoy the Barbie symposium, which I think starts in a few minutes. We wish you all the best.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you guys again.
All right. Andrew Adelson of ESPN.com.
Packer and Durham.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself, too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Greensboro Coliseum for tonight's second round ACC tournament between the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame and the Eagles of Boston College. Gibbs inside Mooney. Mooney lays it up and in.
The NBA suspending its season shortly after the Gobert positive was made public.
Up racing down the left side of the lane, puts it off the glass and in.
there's a basketball game going on, you know, right in front of me, and I'm not even paying any attention to it. So I'm probably writing two different columns already that day, and would end up writing four.
And it was whiplash inducing. I mean, you're looking at the game, and then you look down at your Twitter feed, and something else has happened, and you're trying to process it, and you're trying to write down who just made that basket.
But I was having frequent calls with the other A5 commissioners. They were going through the same experiences in the same time frame, while at the same time continuing to talk to the governor's office and the chief medical officers from the state. So I didn't see a lot of basketball.
It was, Wes, you said it was surreal, man. There was no other way to describe it. Part three tonight, and we were there, and like I said, I'll go to my grave and say in that 2020 ACC basketball tournament, we will never see anything like it again. And that interview we had with Commissioner Swofford at 9:34 a.m., are we going to play basketball today? Yes, we are. And by high noon, not only did we not have basketball, we didn't have a season. It was gone. See ya.
Yeah. By the way, the full series, if you've missed any of parts one and two, part three is tonight. The decision is made. Comes up at about 8 o'clock on the ACC Men's Basketball Twitter feed. Again, congratulations to Scott McBurney and Josh Claff. It's a marvelous product, and it's worth your time, by the way, and great insight. You saw our buddy Ed Harden there from the Greensboro News and Record, and our friend David Teal as well. They're coaches throughout this, and it's really, really good, and I think you'll enjoy it. And they've done a marvelous job of chronicling really one of the more unique and surreal events in sports history at the ACC Men's Basketball Tournament. All right, time for today's quarantine confessional. We're going through a list of folks here, aren't we?
Yes.
And here is Roddy Jones.
Wes Pack, what's up? I hope you guys are doing well. Just wanted to fill you in on what's going on here in the Jones house, well, in the Jones backyard during quarantine. Let's see, what have we been up to? I started a podcast. That's a shameless plug for ACCAF. Go check it out. Laid some mulch, but who hasn't? Cut down some trees. Who hasn't? But honestly, what we've been doing, what are you doing? With these two, it's constantly chasing them. Can you girls say hi? Say hi, Packer and Durham. Look, you guys have both raised two kids. Pack, you raised two girls. I'm going to need some advice quickly because I am overmatched, as you can tell. Hope you guys are doing well. Stay safe. Say bye, girls.
Bye.
I got some advice for you. Hold them tight. I mean, hold them tight, Roddy, because let me tell you what happens. Those little girls turn into teenagers. And when they turn into teenagers, they forget who you are, my man. I'm just telling you. It's Teal was talking about whiplash. That's how quick they grow up, man. Hug those little girls and hug them tight, man. They look great.
Oh, great to see JC and Adri. Thanks, Roddy. Appreciate it. Willie in South Carolina. You got about 30 seconds or so. Hey, Willie.
All right. Could not believe that you guys did not mention Miami on your list of teams that you think are going to do better this year.
We did.
We did.
We did.
Also, I think people are sleeping on Virginia as a team. They're returning like 16 starters, I'm pretty sure. And I think they're not going to go down as much as people say they are. Love the show. Thanks.
Thank you, Willie. We did mention Miami on the rise as a kind of a given. Miami, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Louisville. We threw Pitt in as a sleeper, right. At least I did. And he mentioned Virginia. Bryce Perkins is the answer, right, Wes? I think that's the one thing. He was so dynamic for Broncos team last year that if Virginia can somewhat fill that void, I love what he's building in Charlottesville, but that is a kind of a big-time question mark heading into 2020.
Yeah, and can you tell me how the front's going to be without, what, Eli Hand back in the front, Richard Burney up front? I know Charles Snowden, we've talked about him being a star. What's the back end look like without Bryce Hall? You know, and look, you're playing Georgia to start the year. I don't know where that falls in terms of Georgia's going to be one of the better teams in the country, Pac, especially if their offense catches up with how good they might be defensively. But what does that quarterback situation look like? Is that Keaton Thompson's game? If it is, you know, what does Robert and I have in a player like Thompson at quarterback? So we'll see. Look, that's the beauty of the ACC. Behind Clemson, who's going to be in everybody's, what, top three, Pac? Let's be honest.
Top two.
Maybe number one in some, top two. Yeah, I mean, so the beauty of the ACC is who are the challengers? And there's about a half dozen you can run off with. And, you know, once you start looking at schedules, is where the differential's made. By the way, tomorrow's show, shaping up to be a good one, two head coaches and a quarterback, Dave Clawson, Jeff Collins, and North Carolina Sam Howell, all on Packer and Durham on the Thursday show. That's a pretty solid two-hour block right there, Pack, and I don't know what else we're going to talk about.
Oh, I do. We'll get into all kinds of stuff tomorrow. But I want to go back to the Coastal a second, because the Coastal's always crazy. As we mentioned, there are a handful of teams that are going to catch all the national attention in terms of preseason top 25. Miami, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, or Givens. We talked about Pittsburgh, who I think is the sleeper, much less in the Coastal. I think in the whole conference from that perspective. I don't hear a lot of people buzzing about Virginia. They did win it last year. Again, we go back to the Bryce Perkins thing. You just alluded to what they could potentially have from a quarterback perspective. And Georgia Tech is a team that we'll talk with Jeff Collins tomorrow. But here's old David Cutcliffe. We had their quarterback, Chase Bryce, who's transferred from Clemson. They've got some pieces, too, to cause some problems. So the Coastal, like it always is, will be confusing. It will be fun. And again, we're talking under the impression that we're going to have a 12-game regular season. There are two or three teams at the top that I think people are going to go after. But, hey, you know what? It's going to be the typical on every given Saturday. Anything can happen in the Coastal. And that's why we love it.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. We got plenty of time to go figure this out. We talked about quarterbacks and the power of the quarterback. Think about some of the defensive stars that are going to be in this league this year, too. We mentioned Rousseau and Roche at Miami. I mean, they're defensive stars at just about every school. And names you're not maybe thinking of at this particular point. But we'll examine that as well.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, Sirius XM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.